What is going on? It is the MMA Podcast 195, January 18th, 2017. A ton to break down, including this past weekend's card. Sunday night, we had a card from the Talking Stick Resorts Arena in Phoenix, Arizona. BJ Penn coming back to fight Yair Rodriguez. A lot of other fun fights on the card to break down. Of course, this coming Saturday, we have Bellator 170, Tito Ortiz versus Chael Sonnen coming from the Forum in L.A. A big week of MMA news to break down. Thank you for tuning in. We love doing it. We're going to be breaking down the outlook of 2017. Tons of stuff this week. Let's do it.
Listening to the MMA Podcast.
That's right. It is the MMA Podcast, joined tonight from the deserts of Southern California. He's on Twitter at Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's up?
Oh, Big Jake, just chilling, my man, just rambling around the desert, per usual, maxing out.
P-Money is a rambling man.
Rambling, gambling,
hell yeah,
ambling. I want to say that's a word. Yeah, just
digging souls, digging holes.
Oh my goodness, that's all we do. That's right. Looking forward to the Tito Ortiz, Chael Sonnen circus show fight that we got coming up here. That's going to be taking place in my homelands of Southern California. So yeah, looking forward to that, and also. Reviewing UFC Fight Night 103, which is...
I'm not going to enjoy breaking that card down much, seeing as how my favorite fighter, BJ Penn, got smacked down so terribly. But this is nice to have this Bellator card, because honestly, we're sort of in a doldrum here with MMA news. You know, Conor taking a break, Ronda obviously will be out for a while longer. You know, the sport's biggest stars aren't really around. You know, the UFC just got sold, so things might feel a little unfamiliar. Just as of like a week ago, before we had Woodley versus Wonderboy officially announced for UFC 209, we had no officially scheduled title fights. Yeah, we had rumors, but nothing official, like, at all in the future. And the UFC has, what, 10 weight classes? So it's an odd time for sure. I do, after we break down this UFC card, I do sort of want to not spin long, but just, you know, kind of go weight class to weight class, because now we are at the start of the year. You know, there are a lot of title fights we know are coming, like Garbrandt versus Dillashaw, that aren't officially scheduled yet. So, you know, it'll be interesting to look at both the title fight pictures and to stick with bantamweight. You know, who's up next? Do you put Cruz against a guy like Jimmy Rivera, and maybe the winner that fights next in line? Where do you put John Lineker? Where do you put Rafael Asuncio? Where do you put Brian Caraway, who was going to fight Jimmy Rivera and pulled out of the bout on January 4th, like I said, citing a pulled ovary. I'm interested to break that down. I almost wanted to do it off air first, but you know, I figure it'll be more natural and everything if we do it on air. Plus, honestly, if we don't do that, like I said, we're in the doldrums. This episode probably wouldn't even go 15, 20 minutes. I mean, there's not really that much news aside from talking about the cards. And that's where we'll start. Like I said, the Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix. I saw the highlights of the prelims, which I guess saw a lot of finishes on the UFC Fight Pass card. Finishes by Cyril Asker, Joachim Christensen, Walt Harris, Nina Ansaroff, and Alexei Olenek, who I think locked in the first Ezekiel choke in UFC history. Got $50,000 for it. Was watching the Joe Rogan fight companion to it, and this is a fight they replayed during the main card. And a couple of the guys in the room were really lambasting Pesta for not having good ground defense, because apparently to get Ezekiel choked without a gi is a pretty white belt move. Not that I would know anything, because you know, I've got a very basic white belt knowledge of jiu-jitsu. But yeah, what stood out to you on the prelims? Also, the fight between bantamweights Augusto Mendez and Frankie Saenz. It was a split decision that ended up winning fight of the night. So both of those guys, like Alexei Olenek and Yair Rodriguez, all awarded an extra $50,000 for their efforts.
Well, I certainly I think this was one of those cards that really came through as far as not having the name talent. Again, we were kind of joking about this on the last episode that we did, how nobody on the Fight Pass portion of the prelim card had a Wikipedia even. It did turn out to be a showcase for Walt Harris. The excitement did come through late in the second round. KO via knee with some punches to follow it up. It was really some good action all the way around. Yeah, I was quite surprised with the Ezekiel choke as well. That was, I mean, we've never seen that before in any promotion that I recall, even local, you know, local fights at the reservation out here. Like, you just don't see that. So, amazing submission from Alexei Olenek. Fantastic fight between Mendez and Saenz. Tony Martin and Alex White, I thought that was a good performance from Tony Martin. Alex White's a scrapper as well. Very, very solid performances all around. Nina Ansaroff getting that first UFC victory. She is on the way to being the UFC Women's Strawweight Champion, as predicted by her girlfriend, UFC Women's Bantamweight Champion, Amanda Nunes.
That'd be some WWE shit if the two women's champions were dating. That would be some straight Vince McMahon scripted shit.
Oh my god. That Dana and company would love nothing more than that. Let's take a look and see how her matchups come along after that fight. But yeah, no, really, I thought it was a lot of great.
You got to start to talk tag team titles if that happens. You got to you just got to consider whether we can have women's tag team belts in mixed martial arts.
Oh my god, that would be amazing, and I can almost guarantee you that a good majority of the state athletic commissions would sanction that. Really, yeah, no, solid action all the way around. Dude, for UFC.
On an Indian reservation or something.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. That's
I've said so many offensive things in the last 2 minutes.
No, you're doing good. You're doing good. It's been fine. It's been perfect. PG-13.
That's right. PG-13. Yeah, if you don't have anything else on the prelims, we can talk about the main card. All decisions up until the main event. We'll talk about the wins by Pettis Saunders and Lauzon. I thought Pettis really is evolving, looking good. I don't think he would have won this fight a couple of years ago, but the 23-year-old Pettis, God, he was born in 1993. Doesn't that make you feel old as shit? 93, the man is out here taking big W's, and this is his third straight win, third straight unanimous decision, going back to losing to Ryan Benoit in March 2015, wins against Chris Carriasso, Chris Calades, and John Moraga. That moves him, I would think, into the top 10 of the flyweights. You had Pettis at 15 before this, beating number 8, Moraga. I would say he leapfrogged some guys for sure. Yeah, Pettis looking good. Saunders, McGee, and I thought this would be a split. because just Twitter had it basically 50-50. I scored it 29-28 Saunders. About half of my Twitter agreed with me. About half of my Twitter scored it 28-29 McGee. I think the first round was a gimme for Saunders. The third round, even more so for Court. So I think it all depends how you score that second round. Actually, on MMADecisions.com, which is a site I use all the time, BestFightOdds.com, MMADecisions.com, wonderful, wonderful sites. And clutch-ass sites. And they have fan scoring, and with 71 scorecards submitted, actually most of the voting populace thought that Court won instead of Saunders, who was given the unanimous nod by Derek Cleary, Chris Flores, and Marcos Rosales. Big win for him as well at welterweight, defeating Court McGee. And now he is on a two-fight win streak after losing to Patrick Cote. Then probably the most controversial fight of the night, you had Joe Lauzon versus Marcin Held. Lauzon, I think, won the first round, not nearly as much as Held won the second and third rounds, but I thought Joe did enough to get the first round. But rounds two and three were obvious for the young Pole, Marcin Held. Only 24 fighting the 32-year-old Lauzon from Bridgewater, Massachusetts. And yeah, I think everyone and their mother scored it for Held. Everyone in the media scored it to Held. But Derek Cleary, Jeff Mullen, and Marcos Rosales disagreed. Mullen and Rosales both giving Lauzon the second round, strangely, even though they all agree that Held won the third round. Fans on MMA Decisions scored the second round 94% to Held. So the fact that two or three judges scored it to Lauzon is pretty ridiculous. Joe even admitted after the fight that he didn't think he won, which was a classy move. So it'll be interesting to see how the new UFC ownership and matchmakers treat this. I think the old ones probably would have treated this as more of a draw, not really punish either side, but not really move either side up much anyway. This makes Held 1-3 in his last four fights, losing to Will Brooks, Diego Sanchez, and Joe Lauzon. He's still looking for his first win in the UFC, so I don't think he gets the axe. But I do think he should be very concerned about winning in his next fight. Lauzon, on the other hand, is now on a one-fight win streak after losing to Jim Miller back August of last year. What did you make of those three fights?
Well, Jake, you're absolutely spot on with the Lauzon Marcin Held thing. I mean, even Joe Lauzon said himself, you know, I thought I had the first round. Second round was absolutely his. Third round was his. He's a very classy competitor to even admit, you know, that he did not believe that he won that fight. And it was a good showing for Marcin Held. I was very impressed, you know, again, proving MMA math does not always work out. You know, here Marcin had lost to Diego. Lauzon steamrolled Diego. I thought Lauzon would be too much. And, you know, Marcin, he fought tough, and that's very hard, too, to fight so tough and to should have gotten the win and then not get the
especially
win.
Especially against the guy who used to be on Tough.
Oh, yeah, a guy who was on one of the original seasons, one of the most grizzled veterans in the UFC that's still competing today. He was, I want to say it was 2004 when Joe Lauzon knocked out Jens Pulver in the UFC. I don't have his Wikipedia up in front of me at the moment, but Joe Lauzon has been around. And I mean, Marcin himself, he's been fighting. He fought for Bellator for years.
06, so even, you 06. Were very close. Oh, UFC okay. 63.
Okay, so a decade he's been fighting in the UFC. you know, and Martin, he's been around himself. Yeah, definitely should have gotten the W here. And it's tough because when you feel like you should have gotten the win, you know, do you really go and change up your game plan that much going into the next fight? It's it could be very risky. That could potentially leave you open and susceptible. But you know, that's MMA for you. That's fight judging. Who knows what the fuck is going on? yeah, Ben Saunders, Court McGee, you know, same kind of thing. That's a very coin flip situation. As you mentioned, you know, Twitter, everybody seemed pretty split on it on my timeline as well. MMA decisions, a little more towards Court McGee. Hell, I like both guys. That's just always tough. I thought it was a good fight overall. I thought McGee probably should have got the nod myself. Love Killer B, though. Can't be mad at him. Sergio Pettis, though, soundly getting the UD over Moraga. And you're right. That was just a great test for Sergio Pettis. Now on the 3-fight winning streak. John Moraga, super tough. Fought Demetrius Johnson, super tough. He's just always a very top-notch competitor. So, yeah, that should definitely get him some good momentum into the UFC's flyweight division. And, you know, maybe even just a couple fights away from challenging Demetrius. It'll be interesting to see how much if Sergio can keep coming along as the days go by in his UFC career.
You know, you talked about Joe Lauzon's Wikipedia, and I scrolled all the way down and found that UFC 63 Jens Pulver knockout. But then while you were talking, I scrolled down some more, and I realized that Joe Lauzon, before he fought in the UFC, which was 16 fights beforehand, he fought in some of the most amazingly titled MMA events of all time, including Mass Destruction 15. He fought in Combat Zone, which had Combat Zone 6, Rampage, Combat Zone 7, Gravel Pit. I don't know if they actually fought in a pit of gravel or whether they fought in a ring. Combat Zone 8, Street Justice. He fought Mike Brown. He beat Mike Brown via rear naked choke in Revere, Massachusetts at Combat Zone 8, Street Justice, back October 2nd, 2004. And then 2 months later, fought in Combat Zone 9, Hot Like Fire. These are the actual names of these events. And then, of course, the final event he fought in before coming to the UFC, he fought three times in one night, winning all three in the first round by Achilles Lock Sub, KO Slam, and Armbar. This was WFL6, which was entitled Real. No fooling around. There was no fooling around at WFL6. And 5 or 6 months later, Lauzon comes into the UFC, KOs Jens Pulver in 48 seconds. And since then, man, he has about 23 fights in the UFC with a ton of bonuses, and has turned into probably one of the most popular guys in the UFC. I mean, especially considering, you know, I don't think he ever really fought for a title. I don't remember him, you know, ever winning more than, yeah, I'm looking now. When he joined the UFC, he was on a 3-fight win streak. Since then, he's not been able to win more than 2 in a row at a time. So, you know, he's had a lot of wins, a lot of losses, but always exciting, you know, never lost more than 2 in a row either. And that only happened once. Since 2013, he's been on a win-loss, win-loss, win-loss alternating streak. But enough about Joe Lauzon, because as much as I want to put it off, my boy BJ Penn stepped into the cage against Yair Rodriguez. First couple minutes didn't look bad. The boxing game looked crisper than I imagined. You know, I think we all were realistically expecting a massacre. Yair was a big favorite, and I think the over-under on rounds was like 2. So we all, eventually it evolved into what we all expected. Yep. Yair throwing explosive and rangy leg kicks and body kicks and head kicks and punches, and Penn kind of absorbing a lot of damage until the second round. Early in the second round, Penn was just on his back getting wailed on until, I forget, was it Big John, the ref? I don't know. Whoever it was.
Old Big John.
Stepped in and saved our boy BJ from any more damage early in the second round. I mean, really, the question here, as far as actual championship implications, is who's next for Yair. But the real question is, that I'm hearing a lot more people talk about, is, will Penn actually hang up his gloves this time? Because it looked like he should have hung his gloves up against Nick. Then it looked like he should have hung his gloves up against Rory. Then it looked like he should have hung his gloves up against Frankie. Then it looks like he should have hung his gloves up against Yair. You know, what? How many more times do we go through this this cycle? Because I can tell you, as a BJ Penn fan, it's not very fun.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, like you mentioned, started out not
Why can't
bad.
They just let him fight a scrub? Like, come on. I choked Pat out, I think, there. Pat, are you still with us?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Sorry, had a little technical difficulty there. That was funny as shit. But, no, really, I mean, Yair came out like he typically does. I mean, he was throwing those kicks fast and furious. BJ checking them well, using some pretty good footwork, some pretty good head movement. The boxing was there. He was stinging him with the punches. The punches were looking much better. The hand game was definitely in BJ's favor. But the kicks, the head kicks, the tornado kick, I mean, everything. For the first round, BJ was blocking, but still, I mean, those were still connecting very hard. It wasn't direct, but just the transference of energy, he was getting rocked with those, and he was getting popped pretty good. BJ was able to get a little bit of cage pressure going there very early, but, just was not able to keep it. Yair, he was working the clinch game pretty well when BJ was trying to initiate it, getting some good knees going on. Good attack to the body, really, for the first round through Yair. Very smart for the 5-round fight they're scheduled for. And towards the later end of the first round, you could definitely tell it started to get to be more Yair. But BJ Penn made a pretty good account of himself at the beginning of the fight, but pretty much as soon as the second bell rang, it was just BJ Penn walked forward, Yair walks forward, kicks him in the face, and punches him almost at the same time with just a crazy front kick, right-hand combo. Hits him before he even drops. And the flailing Donkey Kong ground and pound that ensued, definitely a good stoppage by Big John, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, was BJ really intelligently defending himself? He was conscious and flailing. Oh, he was in the fight. No, he was pretty much done. He was, that fight ended just about when it needed to be. So, Good on Big John, and good on Yair Rodriguez. It was a solid performance, but really, don't you have featherweights that BJ can be competing against that are his age or something like that? I see what you're talking about, Jake. There's other options, and really, it just makes me curious. You know, the question is, you know, should he hang it up? We talk about the Rory McDonald and the Nick Diaz fights that he had at 170 pounds. You know, why were you taking those fights against these much larger opponents? Is it just because he didn't want to fight at 155 anymore and be the perceived second fiddle to Frankie Edgar? You know, who knows? But now he comes back 38 years old at 145 pounds, actually made 146 on the scale. And, you know, I don't know. I think there's potential matchups that you can give him that he may win. If BJ Penn wants another fight, I say, you know, maybe give him one more fight. But certainly not something as high ranked, you know, maybe put him on the main card somewhere. You know, open up a pay-per-view, something like that.
Let him fight Sage Northcutt or some shit.
See, there you go. BJ wants to fight it. You know, they can make that 155, 170. You know, we've seen Sage fight at both. Perfect. Damn it, Jake. That's why I love doing the MMA podcast with you. You're always on it.
I've talked enough about BJ Penn getting his ass kicked. Are you good with that?
Yeah, we can move it on. We can move it on.
Let's move moving on. Tim Kennedy actually making the news, retiring, unfortunately, with a long Facebook post. I won't read it all, but Kelvin Gastelum defeating him just about a month ago, and Tim hanging up the gloves, which, you know, good for him. He had a good career, has other shit going on, seems to have gotten out of the game with, you know, without losing any mental ability or cognition. Any thoughts on old Tim Kennedy hanging up the gloves?
Oh man, well, Tim Kennedy is an American hero. God bless him.
He is. God bless him.
You know,
and he came on the podcast once. God bless him.
Yeah, no, truly. That was before my time. That was before Stoolgate. You know, we probably would have had a little dust up over that, but you know, no, I mean, Tim Kennedy, just truly a good competitor. Did have a very good career in MMA, solid runs in Strikeforce and UFC. Wishing him all the best. I'm sure, you know, he's one of our finest. I'm sure he'll do quite well.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Probably somewhere in the Middle East, sniping someone in ISIS somewhere on the Kandahar Mountain Blackwater Range. Yep, beautiful, making millions of dollars. what else? Stipe pissed off at the UFC, mad that Overeem made more money than he did in his last fight. Which I say, get over it, kinda. Because you signed the contract, and the reason Overeem made more than you is because he's a legend and you're not. And eventually you'll start to get paid that money, that ex-UFC champ money. You're still relatively young. Once you get up into taking as many fights as Overeem has, maybe you'll catch a losing streak, but you'll still get those paychecks for the same reason Overeem gets those checks. So don't complain it now if you're going to come into making that money later on in your career, probably, is my opinion. Fighters are, I mean, they are underpaid, and I won't argue that fighters should get paid more. But, you know, there should be a union. But to, I don't know, to gripe about your checks when you got nothing but green ahead of you, I don't know. I'm not really that sympathetic. Maybe I'm just an asshole.
Well, no, Jake, you're not an asshole. I mean, really, you put it spot on. That's, I mean, I remember talking about Stipe Miocic as a prospect back on MMA Mental back in the day with our boy Ray Thompson.
Are you big all shout right? out
at MMA Mental. Follow the homie on Twitter. You know, we were talking about Stipe as a prospect when he was first coming into the UFC as a heavyweight. And, you know, now, I mean, gosh, he's finally there, and he's come a long way. And, you know, he's made a name for himself, fought the fights, but he's the champ now. But he's just getting to where Overeem has been for years. Overeem was the K1 Grand Prix champion. He was the Dream champion, the Grand Prix, the Strikeforce champion, the champion. he's dominated everywhere. He's been that force. Promotions have used Alistair Overeem to basically just carry them on his back. And, you know, Stipe, he's just getting, you know, people are just starting to buy into Stipe. I mean, I think there's kind of that feeling with Stipe. I mean, and I don't know if it's the heavyweight division, really, but it's just like, gosh, you feel like almost any fight, you're like, oh, man, I don't know if Stipe is going to beat Overeem. Oh, man, I don't know if Stipe is going to beat whoever the hell it is he fights next. Just Overeem is just a scary dude. He's a bankable dude, and he's a marketable brand in and of himself already. Stipe is in a good place right now, but he needs to just win a couple more to get to that place himself.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we'll see if, you know, he gets another couple title defenses. I mean, he's already here. Let me look this up, because I know historically that heavyweight championship has not been held long by the people who hold it. Like, it's about that, so looking back, the most defenses anyone has of that belt is 2. Wow. Starting off with Randy, who defended it twice. Then Tim Sylvia, who defended it twice. Brock Lesnar defended it twice against Miron Carwin after earning it at UFC 191. Kane defended it twice against Bigfoot and Jr. Miocek defended it once against Overeem. So he's 2 wins away from making history there. Bit of news, Cody Garbrandt and TJ Dillashaw. I don't know if it's official as far as what event they'll be fighting at, but apparently they have been chosen to coach opposite each other at Tough 25. Apparently this is going to be Tough All-Stars, where... It's going to be 17 former UFC fighters no longer under contract, as well as 2 active UFC rosters, or 2 active UFC fighters as a part of the 23-man Tough tryouts held last month in December. The tryout attendees include Johnny Nunez, Dominic Waters, Jesse Taylor, Joe Stevenson, Gilbert Smith, our boy Gilbert from Team Darkside, Julian Lane, Edward Gordon, I think that's Eddie Truck Gordon, Diego Lima, brother of Bellator's Douglas Lima, Cajun Johnson, James Krause, Zach Cummings, another Team Darkside guy, Mehdi Baghdad, Gerald Harris, Justin Edwards, Seth Brzezinski, Mike Ricci, Jamie Yeager, Hector Cervantes, Edward Ellis, Junie Browning, Ramsey Nijem, Hayden Hassan, and Thomas Galicchio. That's a pretty stacked lineup. I think I might be interested in watching this, especially with all the backstory between the 2 coaches, Garbrandt and Dillashaw. Apparently they're going to start filming this month, and the show will debut in Fox Sports 1 on April, which, you do have Cody and TJ fight, they, I guess, would fight after the airing of that show, so probably sometime during the summer. Love that fight. Love that idea for Tough. Tough's kind of been fading out. But I liked the flyweight gimmick they did, even though I didn't watch a lot of episodes. But this, you've got a lot of names. You've got Julian Lane of Tough Infamy. He's the let me bang bro guy. You got all sorts of names. Former winners, Ed Truck Gordon, names that the old school heads will like Joe Stevenson and Junie Browning. This will be interesting.
Yeah, you know what? I really like that, actually. There has not been a whole lot. Even the flyweight, I really actually wanted to watch that one, the Road to the Champions, or whatever the fuck it was called, the Road to the Champion, or the one with all the champions, all the flyweights. Wanted to peep that one, but just there hasn't been a whole lot to draw me back. But really what that one has going for it, like you said, the storylines. These are people, I mean, there's I'm not even going to say any names, but you know, and a lot of people listening that heard that list of names, a lot of flashbacks happen hearing some of those names, and you're like, oh, I'd like to see that ass get kicked. So that should be a pretty fun season. I'm really looking forward to that. And as far as the matchup, yeah, that's great. I'm very much looking forward to Garbrandt versus Dillashaw. A whole bunch of, speaking of storylines, there's certainly plenty to go with there. Lots of ways to hype that. And man, both guys looking really good with a lot to prove lately. So no, that's pretty good overall. Typically, I'm not a huge fan of putting UFC champions on the shelf and holding up their title defenses because you have to wait for filming a TV show and then the airing of that TV show, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, again, it's all about the dough, and I can certainly see why they're doing it. If anything, this could be a good way to draw in the viewers.
Junie Browning, of course, known for being released from the UFC years ago after being rushed to a hospital after taking 16 Klonopin pills in an apparent suicide attempt. After being taken to a room at the hospital, Browning tried to leave, became angry, pushing a female nurse, punching a male nurse, and kicking another male nurse while apparently screaming, "Do you know who I am? I will kill you and rape your family." I guess this was in Vegas. The UFC wasn't too cool with that. And, yeah, so I, you know, the fact that he was trying out, I guess, means that he has rehabilitated his life, which is fucking awesome. There's no better story than an awesome turnaround story, and I'm glad he got his act together. But, nonetheless, it would be fun to see him on Tough. Last bit of news, I guess, Hendricks Lombard, fucking, yes, we'll watch, bang fest. Johnny Hendricks moves to middleweight and will fight Hector Lombard at UFC Fight Night 105 in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Yeah, I don't know, they have a date for this, February 19th, so just about a month from now. Fucking awesome fight. Who you got?
Oh, man. You know what? I do not. Man, that is a.
I don't know either. Because I want to say Lombard. But Lombard just lost to Hendo, who's basically just like a scaled down, less dangerous version. Like an older version of Johnny. Like, I don't.
True. It's tough. True. Yeah, I mean, with Hendricks and the way things have been going with him, it's just so hard to call. I mean, the loss to Bagny, that's tough. I mean, it keeps being one of those things. Well, that was a guy that was super tall and rangy. You know, you keep finding these excuses. At a certain point, it's like, no, when is it just Johnny Hendricks has fallen off? Yeah, Hector Lombard, I mean, they're pretty close style-wise, too. I mean, the heavy hands, the boxing. Hector Lombard has the judo going for him. So, man, you know what? And really, as I know you mentioned before, Jake, we haven't really seen that knockout power. And really, a lot of people mentioned we haven't seen that knockout power from Johnny as of late. And Lombard still seems to have it, even though he's a good bit older than Johnny Hendricks. So, I don't know. I think I'd probably have to actually lean towards Lightning Lombard in that one.
Lightning Lombard. Yeah, you know what? I'll take Johnny just to be devil's advocate here. But this is one I'm looking forward to because you can't sleep on Lombard's grappling either. He has some crazy judo. We'll see who wins that one. Then one last fight announcement that got announced literally in the last 10 minutes of last week's show, but I wasn't sure if it was real or not, so I decided not to treat it like news, but it was. Anderson Silva, Derek Brunson, UFC 208. This is another fight I'm super stoked for. Brunson, I don't know if there's a line out for it yet. I don't see one on Best Fight Odds. But I'm assuming Derek Brunson will be the favorite.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would think so in that one. Just Brunson, he's been much more consistent than Anderson Silva as of late. I mean, never thought we would say that about Anderson Silva, Mr. 16-0, one of the greatest of all time. But, you know, it's been tough coming back from the leg break, but... I mean, it's not like he's been doing terribly himself. I mean, he's still the spider. He's still quite game for any fight. Brunson, though, man, might be a bad matchup. Just he's got the classic wrestler. We know Anderson Silva versus the dreaded wrestler. And Brunson has a well-rounded skill set. Good with the hands. I don't know if he wants to test those too much against Anderson Silva. Man, I still feel like Silva is a coin toss against anybody for sure. And I don't know. The more I talk about it, I feel like Anderson Silva probably still should be the favorite. I mean, he's a spider. Man, but I don't know. I think time is on Derek Brunson's side in this one. So if I were a betting man, I'd say probably putting some dough on Brunson, but... Yeah, the spider. He's in it, Jake.
He's in it, but I don't know if he's at Brunson's level. I don't know if he's still at a championship level at any weight class. Brunson, yeah, he just lost to Robert Whittaker, but before that, he was on a crazy tear, a 5-fight win streak. Those are hard to come by in the UFC, so I'm taking Brunson. Let's do that. Let's do it lightning round style. I don't want to stay more than a minute on one weight class, but maybe let's try and do this like, I don't know, every few months, you know, when we've got a kind of slow week and each division has evolved a little bit more. Let's and this is it seems like a decent time to talk about it because we don't have many officially drawn up championship fights. Let's talk about these weight division outlooks. Starting, I guess we'll do the women's first. Starting with the lightest weights going up, and currently that would start with the women's 115. Joanna just monstering over everyone. I think Claudia makes sense as the number one rank where she is right now, but man, what do you do with this weight class? It seems like Joanna has just about cleaned it out. She's beaten Claudia twice, beat Carla with an exclamation point, just beat Carolina Kowalkiewicz. Yeah, Waterson, who's on the way up, who just beat Paige Van Zandt, Alexa Grasso, another rising star. But right now... Joanna and Mighty Mouse with I think they're at 4-9 title defenses. These are your two dominant champions currently.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean the UFC women's champions, especially I mean Joanna, she's had multiple defenses now. Just really looking good against all competitors. A lot of or a couple of her opponents, I want to say, fighting at even heavier weight classes now. As you mentioned, the karate hottie, Michelle Watterson, she's a very marketable fighter, and she's for good cause. I mean, she's skilled, she's talented. I think that's certainly a route they got to be going next. I don't know if she's, I mean, she very well could be next for Joanna. There's certainly no shortage of good opponents for her at the 115-pound class. Kowalkiewicz, she looked very game as well in her fight.
She beat Thug Rose, which I guess was kind of your number one contendership fight. Claudia now has one fight since losing to Joanna. So moving down from there, I don't know, Jessica Andrade, Tisha Torres, Michelle Watterson. Maybe do Watterson versus Torres for the next shot. I mean, things are really starting to get bare in the 115s.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Kowalkiewicz, if she gets maybe one more good fight, another good convincing win, because I want to say at least towards the last round, she started to look pretty decent. She really had Joanna Champ hurt pretty bad there at one point, I want to say in the later round. So she's a threat. But certainly there's a little bit more building it, but I would not be surprised if the old karate hottie is who we see next.
Yeah, moving on, 135, Amanda Nunes Champ, Shevchenko Pena. We're going to see that in like 10 days, and that's your obvious number one contendership fight. That's pretty easy. You got Rousey floating around. Will she ever fight again? Will Kat Zingano ever fight again? Will Misha Tate ever fight again? Holly Holm will fight again, but will she ever fight at 35 again? So, you know, your big, your kind of Mount Rushmore as of a couple years ago with Rousey, Tate, Zingano, and Holm. Who know if any of them ever fight at women's bantamweight again? And you kind of have this new breed of fighter in your Nunes and Shevchenko's. And I think the winner of Pena Shevchenko will be probably Amanda Nunes's stiffest challenge to date. Should be fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, both Pena and Shevchenko, very tough girls. And I know that Shevchenko certainly wants to get Amanda Nunes in a 5-round fight and see how things go in a rematch. Pena, certainly she's on a good tear herself. I want to say she's on a 4-fight streak. So, and she's very gritty, very tough. So whoever wins from that definitely is going to be quite the handful for Amanda Nunes. I mean, Rocky Pennington, she herself, she's on a good win streak, very quietly, you know, having just beat Misha Tate, beat Elizabeth Phillips, Betch Kohea. So she's beating some names too. If she, I don't quite know what she's got lined up next, but, she keeps stacking up those W's. She's certainly, going to be in line for, a title fight pretty soon herself.
Women's 145. You got Cyborg on the rack for probably a year. So you got Holm and De Randamie, and that's it so far. Who are you going to pick in that fight? I think I'm leaning Holm now. That might change. It's obviously kickboxing with Holm and Muay Thai and Jermaine De Randamie. Both of them master technicians at their given art. But I see Holm winning this one, even though I think that might change between now and then. I don't know. Not saying it will, but it could very easily, because Jermaine De Randamie ain't nothing to fuck with.
No, absolutely not. She is a brutal kickboxer, a really fantastic Muay Thai striker. And it's just great having all these world champion class strikers like Jermaine Durandamé, Holly Holm, Joanny and Jacek, Valentina Shevchenko. You know, seeing them in competition in women's mixed martial arts these days. As far as that goes, I mean, my goodness, that's quite brutal. I think what it'll come down to in that fight, I think Holly Holm may just have a little more ground. A little more ground game. I mean, I really, who knows? That's kind of a coin flip, right? But one thing I know, Jake, you and I will default to, she does have Jackson Winklejohn in her corner. So you can rest assured they're going to be drawing up a good game plan for Holm versus Durandamé. And I think that's going to be half the battle. Plus, you know, Holm, she's just a super tough woman herself. So, man, hard to call. Another coin flip one, I would suggest, but I would have to go with, I'm leaning home early just based on the Jackson Wink advantage.
Bringing us to the flyweights, Mighty Mouse ruling over everyone. Benavidez just beat Cejudo. Is it time to give him a third crack?
I mean, the way things are looking, I mean, you just may have to. I mean, it's not unprecedented. We've seen it before. I mean, hate to bring it up, Jake, but BJ Penn versus Frankie Edgar. And I know, I mean, the first fight, if I recall correctly, was a split decision versus Demetrius Johnson. The second fight, super quick knockout loss. I'm sure Joseph would like to get back in there and at least just try and outdo that performance. Of course, it very well could be time to give him another shot.
For sure. Bantamweight, we spoke about briefly. We're going to have Cody Garbrandt versus Dillashaw for the title. What's next for Cruz? You have him at 1. Lineker at 3, Rafael Asuncio at 4. With Cruz being so old, do you draw him up a number one title contender shot immediately? I don't know, because Asuncio and Lineker are both up there, but both are coming off losses, if I'm not mistaken. Asuncio to Dillashaw, yeah, at UFC 200, and Lineker also to Dillashaw. What do you do as far as who fights the winner of Dillashaw Garbrandt?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great question. I think Cruz, maybe give him one more fight. You could make the case, you know, just let him sit out, see who wins. I mean, certainly if TJ Dillashaw were to win the title from Cody Garbrandt, I know TJ Dillashaw has been lobbying for that rematch against Dominic Cruz. And Dominic Cruz, I'm sure, would like any opportunity to get the belt back and maybe even put a more definitive stamp on his victory over TJ Dillashaw. And, you know, if Cody were to retain, that's perfect. Certainly Dominic, more than anything, would like to avenge that loss. So, I think, Dominic is probably just going to have to stay active again in light of the tough shooting schedule and all that good stuff. I don't know that Dominic Cruz would want to sit on the sidelines for the entire year and, wait to see how all that plays out before he gets another fight. Again, with Cruz having missed so much of his career due to the injuries and everything like that, trying to rehab and trying to work back, I wouldn't doubt he would like another fight just to try and get that momentum back up as well, and get a positive head of steam of things going into a possible title fight.
Moving to featherweight, which is, I guess, one of the more confusing ones now. You got Jose Aldo, which I don't know what he's doing. If, you know, you have Max saying that Aldo won't fight him. Max has the interim belt, calling him Jose Waldo. You got Frankie sitting at number two, who can't really say anything because he's coming off a loss to Waldo. Even though he had that nice one against Jeremy Stevens at UFC 205. I don't know. I guess I need to pay more attention to the Aldo Holloway thing and why it's not happening. Was it supposed to happen at UFC 208? Apparently I'm bringing up this article right now that seems to be about a month old. Saying that Holloway was on board with fighting at UFC 208. After some consideration, he realized nagging injuries and the desire to spend holidays with his family was too much to overcome. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, fuck MMAJunkie.com. MMAJunkie.com, suck my dick. I hate autoplay videos so bad. But, yeah, apparently he had a swollen up ankle, needed a little time to recoup. So I guess we will see that, maybe this spring, this summer, as far as who comes after that. Cub Swanson really upped his stock a ton with a win over Duho Choi. You got Yair Rodriguez rolling up the ranks. You got Pettis Stevens at 5-6, Lamas at 3. I guess we're all just waiting for that title shot to go down between Aldo and Holloway.
Yeah, really, it's hard to do much, and I mean now they've got to make an official title. They got to have some sort of unifier, but what do you do until then? I mean, you're just kind of having contenders knock each other off. I mean, yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, Charles Oliveira, he's someone I always wanted to see get in the featherweight title shot, but he's coming off a couple losses in a row. Maybe Dennis Bermudez. He's a perennial contender, kind of floating around in there. As you mentioned, Yair Rodriguez starting to climb his way up now, 6-0 in the UFC. I mean, he's starting to make his way up there. They gotta get the Jose Waldo Max Holloway title unifier going, so we can get these contenders in line.
That's right. And you know what? Just because I don't want to get too repetitive here, let's hold on. Let's tap the brakes and save the other five weight classes, lightweight and up. Let's do that next week. Cause I don't want this to sound too monotonous. So we'll get back to Conor McGregor's lightweight division, go all the way up to the heavies, next week, which I guess leaves us with Bellator 170, this Saturday. I guess Bellator usually does a Friday card, but I guess maybe because they know they don't have to compete with the UFC, they're doing it on Saturday from the Forum in Inglewood, California. The prelims starting at 7, the main card at 9 p.m. Eastern on Spike TV. Obviously headlined by Tito Ortiz and Chael Sonnen. Other fights of note, though, on the card, Paul Daly, big favorite over Brennan Ward. Look for a fun knockout there. Hollett Gracie, an underdog to Hisaki Kato. I don't see Gracie winning this fight. Georgie Karakanyan versus Emmanuel Sanchez, Derek Anderson, and Derek Campos. Any thoughts on any of those fights before we talk Sonnen and Ortiz and put a bow on it and get out at you?
Daly versus Ward, as you mentioned, that should make for some good knockout fun. I mean, Brennan Ward has some power in his hands. He's quite capable of knocking someone out himself, but I mean, Semtex is Semtex, man. I really don't know. I think should be a nice showcase for Semtex at the Forum there. Sanchez versus Karakanyan. I think Karakanyan should probably handle that one fairly handily. Should be a fairly fun card, I'd say.
A lot of shit talking going down between Chael Sonnen and Tito Ortiz. A lot of talk about their previous scrap, not in MMA, but in college wrestling, where Chael got the best of Tito. Tito obviously got into the sport and became a legend before Chael. Chael saying that he joined up and started fighting MMA because he wanted what Tito had, never got it in a world championship. I don't think this fight will, it isn't like this fight's for a belt, and I don't really think the winner of this fight has a very good chance to take the belt from Phil Davis. But nonetheless, it's a fun fight. It's a legends fight. It's a fight that's a legends fight, but at the same time, not a complete farce like Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie. Who am I, a 1920s gangster? I got Chael, of course, winning this fight. I think he's a little young, a little spryer. He's had a little bit more time off. And when it comes down to wrestling, I think Tito's really only chance is to take you down and bash you up, where Chael, that's not going to happen. So I have Chael winning this one via unanimous decision. Who do you have in the main event?
Boy, well, yeah, this isn't quite the farce that Royce Gracie versus Ken Shamrock was, but, man, I mean, I don't want to say it's that far away either. I mean, Chael Sonnen versus Tito Ortiz, man, these guys, I mean, God bless Chael. Chael, an American hero. Tito Ortiz, a UFC legend. But, man, this fight should have happened 15 years ago or something like that easily. That's what Bellator's into putting on these days, but it'll be fun. It'll be a fun show. Who knows how hot the urine's going to be, how steaming it is. I don't know if Bellator's working with USADA, if you catch my meaning.
Wink, wink, wink.
At least Chael. no, my man. God bless him. It should be fun. It should make for a great fight. I'm really looking forward to it. If they could just inject him with a little bit of test in between rounds, you know, really bring it back to the 90s. I mean, I don't know if anybody out there has seen the video of Chael Sonnen pinning Tito Ortiz in the wrestling match from the college days, but it was fairly swift and efficient work. Granted, mixed martial arts is not freestyle wrestling.
Did you say it was a work?
Well, that word was in there. I'm not saying that was the operative word, but it was quick. It was efficient. You know, it was quick, efficient work. I would not. I mean, I don't think this is going to play out the same way. This is mixed martial arts, completely different. But, I mean, really, neither of these guys' striking is that feared. And they both really rely on a ground-and-pound heavy game plan. I think Chael's going to get it. I think Chael's going to get the best of them. And, I mean, hey, if you could beat him back then when you were a couple young bucks, you know, with stars in your eyes back in the college days, you know, I think why would you not be able to replicate that in MMA today? I'm taking Chael.
We're both taking Chael tonight. Thank you for tuning in to the MMA Podcast. As always, we're on Twitter at the MMA Podcast. You guessed it. iTunes, SoundCloud, all that. Pat, you got anything for the people?
Oh, love the people. Love you, Big Jake. It's always a pleasure. At Sweet Pappy Jones is where you find the kid. Always a pleasure.
And, have a good time watching this Bellator card. We'll be back next week to talk about UFC on Fox 23, the Denver card, Shevchenko versus Pena. That's January 28th. I think we got a Bellator card thrown in there, too. Hopefully a little bit more MMA news than we had this week. Of course, we'll look at lightweight, welterweight, middleweight, 205, and heavyweight as far as all those title pictures go. Might even toss an interview in here sometime in the next month or two. We'll see. We appreciate the shit out of you. This was UFC 195, TMP 195. And until next week, we...
Shut up, Jake. Tune into the MMA Podcast. every Tuesday night.
Oh, yeah.
Got the wild style, always been a foul child. Will I, sucker? I be the coming yeah. like Noah.
The MMA podcast, Jake is the host. And since Ramsey's been in a wheelchair, the Aunt Jimmy show has been on a roll. I want to say John Jones is a host.